Swing and a miss, strike three. Sproat gets him to chase down and away. Swung on and missed, strike three. Up the ladder at 99 for his second strikeout of the inning. 1-2, swing and a miss, strike three. Swing and a miss, strike three. Goes to the sweeper. Breaking ball, called strike three, and Rivera knew it. Payoff, swing and a miss, strike three.
Here's a 2-2, strike three. I called that one from up here. Swing and a miss, strike three. Class A down on the sweeper. Swing and a miss, strike three. He got him. Third time, Terada has come up empty against Brandon Sproat.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, August the 3rd, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks of the Fan-Sided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You know it's not a good afternoon for the Mets when I'm coming to you and they're actually still playing. So unless in the middle of this broadcast the Mets have a two-out miraculous comeback from eight runs down, I decided to kick off the show a little early because we have a fun, something that we haven't done in a while, fun for those that are subscribers of X. I'll be doing a Spaces over on X later tonight at 9 o'clock. So hop on X. If you follow me, check it out. And, you know, we'll be able to take some questions and comments and we'll see. I plan on being on for about an hour. We'll see how that goes, how long it lasts, how the interaction is. It, like I always say, it reminds me of the old Blog Talk Radio live feeds that people used to call in. And it was when radio was still a little bit of an appointment situation. It's not so much now anymore with streaming and podcasting and apps and all that stuff. So anyway, that's why I'm coming to you. Like basically the game just ended. I'm in the middle of the ninth inning. I'm doing my prep. Mets disappointing weekend, losing 2 out of 3 of the Giants. I was in the building on Friday. Great vibes. The Super Bullpen had its chance to make its debut. The offense up and down all weekend. The starting pitching not great outside of David Peterson. And we have a lot to talk about here. So it's been this wild week of lots of radio, lots of content. Me doing a live stream with our good buddy Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea. Me doing trade deadline shows about the Super Bullpen post-trade deadline, you know, of course, the regular show, and then tons of content over at the Substack newsletter. So I feel like I've been coming to you almost every day. I mean, you know, this is the time of the year where maybe even more so than the winter meetings or sometimes during the winter when there's all the breaking news, you kind of get burnt out a little bit here. But away we go, and I know immediately, and even was brought up on the broadcast today, as Frankie Montas, a really lousy outing, his second lousy outing in a row, and he's been bad with an ERA over 6.5. And the Mets starting pitching, which was so good earlier in the year, starting to fade a little bit, regression to the mean. Holmes struggling, you know, Manaea, though he's pitched well, not going deep. Senga, his command is all over the place. We just talked about Montas. And really, right now, the ace, the only one that you could count on to give you some length and quality is David Peterson. Who knows what the future is with Paul Blackburn doing his rehab stint. Tyler McGill is just starting to throw batting practice. And then, of course, you have the kids, the Sproats and the McLeans down in AAA. The calls are going to get louder for them. And even on the offensive side, as the team continues to be a lot of feast or famine and struggle, unfortunately, with the struggling with the runners in scoring position. You know, even from that standpoint, there's talk, you know, can the Mets look at some of their top hitting prospects and is there an opportunity there? So we're going to get all into that. There is some historical precedent. I'll get into history a little bit about how the Mets can navigate this roster construction. And our good friend, and it was actually multiple people contacted me and reached out, wanting him to get on the show. Ernie Dove, prospect guru, Mets prospect guru, was on the show a little over a month ago. We always get him on to talk about the prospect rankings, what's going on in the system, who should we be looking at. Well, today it's going to be a little different. We're going to look at what the Mets gave up at the deadline, one last look there. How painful was that deadline? Is there anything on the way that could help the Mets now immediately? Is it even realistic with the 40-man machinations for that to happen? And we'll get into the pitchers. We'll get into even Carson Benge, who's tearing it up down in AA. Is there an opportunity for him to do maybe what Michael Conforto did at one point just 10 years ago, come up and jolt the offense, even with the arrival of Cedric Mullins? So we'll get into all of that. Ernie will join me. And I had a chance to talk to Ernie right before the game. So obviously the Montas situation, which we dive into the pitchers a little bit. We don't have that information. He joined me in the pregame. So just keep that in mind when that segment comes up. So anyway, let's get started. So you don't like where the starting pitching is going. It's fading. As the Mets finally address the bullpen and short up center field, now the starting pitching is fading. And that's the frustrating part, I think, about the 2025 Mets, is that you really never had all components of this club firing at 100% at all times. If the top four hitters are hitting, the kids and the component hitters are not. If the starting pitching is doing really well, you have a porous and leaky bullpen. You know, it's been a frustrating situation. The bullpen seems to get solved. Great outing by Austin Warren, saving the bullpen. And the starting pitching has started to fade and regress a little bit. Now, before we get crazy about what Stearns did or didn't do at the deadline, let me remind you that it wasn't like outside of Merrill Kelly there was a ton of pitching moved at the deadline. And the Mets have a responsibility, as Stearns has, you know, talked about, is sustaining now in the future. And with the prices of starting pitching and the risks that come with it, and if you look at the offseason, some of the big names over the last couple of years, the big names, you know, the Blake Snell out most of the year, Corbin Burns out with Tommy John surgery, the long contract that these pitchers require. Outside of Max Fried, which was a long-term contract, where you could argue maybe the Mets could have got in on that. That came right after the Soto situation. You know, Max Fried is really the only one that, as a long-term deal, you could say, hey, look at that, you know, former top of the rotation anchor over there in Atlanta, goes over to the Yankees. That's really it. You know, that's what you're looking at right now. Everybody in some way, the Dodgers included, is struggling a little bit with their starting pitching. And the game has evolved. We talked a lot about this after the deadline, where it's almost like you have a bulk pitcher, which is your starter, and it's games that now start with the bullpen as early as the fifth or sixth inning, and really games are won in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, and mainly won in the eighth and ninth inning. So I'm not going to sit here and second-guess David Stearns. I'm sure he was going to, and I know it sounded like he was looking to maybe get in on a starting pitcher like an Alcantara, maybe a Merrill Kelly, whatever was out there. There was just not a fit or a desire for the team that had this pitching to send them over. Now, the good news for the Mets, and you'll hear a little bit of this when Ernie comes on, Ernie Dove, is that the Mets have been developing pitching. And I think just a year from now, you'll start to see, whether it be McClain and Sproat, there's a Jack Winiger, there's a bunch of guys that, you know, over the next 2 years, I think are going to start to maybe make their way into the Mets rotation. And because the Mets don't have a lot of long-term contracts in that rotation, I think that, you know, you could conceivably have 3 to 4 players in this rotation homegrown within the next 24 months. Now, how good they're going to be, how they can stay healthy. Let's not forget there's Christian Scott who's out there, another name that'll be available in the future. The Mets have some starting pitching on the way. Now, that's not going to necessarily help them in 2025, and the Mets are trying to win a division here. They're trying to get into the postseason and go deep. So, you know, you have to look at it right now and say, well, what can the Mets do? The easy thing to say right now is, hey, call up Sproat or call up McClain. And even with their innings, you know, let's say they want to keep them to 30 or 40 innings above what they were last year. Well, that's about 5 or 6 starts maybe that you could get out of these kids, enough where you could confidently put them in. Now, the Mets have done this before. If you remember back in 2006, and that season, it's ironic, you know, we talk about, and I think this year the Mets lack of length by their rotation is probably, it might be the worst it's ever been in the history of the franchise. I don't know that for a fact. All I know is I always thought 2006 was one of those years where they just didn't get a lot of length out of their starting pitchers. And for the most part, during the Terry Collins years, especially when they were competitive, going to the World Series, competing for a playoff spot, you were always going to get 7 innings out of your Harveys, your Mats, your DeGroms, guys like that, even as recently as, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. This year, Mets starters account for only 57% of the innings. Last year, they were 62% of the innings, which was low, but this is a 5% jump. In 2006, and I remember Rick Peterson's talked about it all the time, about how concerned he was, how sustainable it was. You know, Mets pitchers, the starters accounted for 63% of the innings, and they had a ton of innings that year. And they were lucky to have a really strong bulk reliever, a long man, they called him back then. Now they call him bulk relievers. And Darren Oliver, a former starter. You know, you had the lefty-righty early inning relievers like Feliciano, Pedro Feliciano, Perpetual Pedro, and Chad Bradford. You had Aaron Holloman. You had Billy Wagner. You had Guillermo Motto. And then before he went down with a shoulder injury, you had Duaner Sanchez. The Mets had tons of quality arms to fill the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. And typically, outside of a few El Duque, a few Pedro Martinez starts that year, you were, you know, getting 9, maybe more outs out of that bullpen sometimes. So this is not unheard of. And in that season, the Mets tried and brought up Mike Pelfrey, you know, trying to get maybe a top prospect, lightning in a bottle. In a lot of ways, Pelfrey was a hype prospect. Will he be as good as McClain and Sproat? Who knows? Pelfrey was a solid pitcher until he got hurt. You know, he's a solid pitcher for 2 or 3 years. Nothing great, you know, mid-rotation, league average, had potential, never really lived up to his hype. Another story for another day. But could the Mets do something similar right now? It'll be interesting. And I think the thing that I'm not so sure about is, you know, where would that roster spot come from? Now, I understand a Sproat or a McClain, you know, hey, you got to go, you got to find a spot for them. Finding a spot on the 40-man roster, that's easy, okay? You know, you could designate someone for assignment off the roster, put them on, you start their clock on the 40-man. You know, there's all sorts of other repercussions to that, but hey, you want to win, right? But if you look at the Mets rotation, unless somebody's going to go on the IL, even if it's for, you know, I'm not saying it's a phantom IL, just for some rest because of tendonitis, because every pitcher could legitimately go on the IL for rest if you want to legitimately put them on the injured list. I mean, who would it be? You're going to put Senga again, who just came off and needs repetition to be good? I mean, maybe Montas, you could say, hey, how's your lat feeling? What's with the tendonitis? Do you need more time? You know, maybe that. You know, we'll see what the situation is after the game when Carlos Mendoza talks to reporters. You know, Manaea just came back. Maybe you add him as a 6th starter. Now, because they built up the Super Bullpen, yeah, they have the Austin Warren spot that you could play around with and shuttle. But unless you're looking to designate Ryan Stanek for assignment off here, and he's been awful. I mean, a guy that you thought could possibly, I mean, they would use him as a closer as recently as a week ago. Think about that. He's been bad all year. Been very disappointing, Ryan Stanek. I mean, if they want to open that up, I mean, where are you going to go right now to even find room on this roster for a Sproat or McClain? You have to have a defined role for them. It'll probably be Sproat, by the way, I would think, over McClain. That's at least what the smoke in, around, you know, who would get the call you see bandied about throughout those in the know. And you have to have a defined role. Is he going to start once every 6 days in a 6-man rotation? Is he going to come out of the bullpen in a bulk situation or maybe even help the bullpen with some of the long innings? I think that would be wasteful knowing that right now it'd be a shame if the Mets figured out innings 6 through 9, but they're not figuring out innings 1 through 4 because you figured you'd at least get 5 innings, 2 or 3 runs out of these guys. And the last couple of games, you haven't. You haven't, and it's been more of a trend, you know, over the last week. Now, you don't want 1 week to get you crazy. Remember that. So, you know, keep that in mind. And typically, here's the thing with these kids. You know, maybe they come up, maybe they give you a jolt. Maybe they, you know, make their way around the league once. You're putting Sproat in a really tough spot, especially if you bring him up now. Team's starting pitching is struggling. All right, they got the Cleveland series. You know, hopefully they get back on track there because they got a tough series with Milwaukee coming up next week, and that's a really tough series on the road. It's somewhat of a test series, to tell you the truth, because they haven't been good on the road. It's something we'll talk about more maybe as it gets closer. And then they come home and they're facing the Braves, always tough. I mean, Seattle, a playoff team. Then they go to the Nats. So they play a lot of, you know, the Phillies not too far in the future at the end of the month. So it's not like they're going to be coming in a situation where they could be facing Colorado or a team that's going absolutely nowhere, the White Sox. And they're able to kind of ease themselves in. They're getting thrown into the deep end of the pool automatically. And that's asking a lot. And, you know, sometimes even for the most talented pitcher, you know, that's a daunting task. So I'm not so sure, knowing how David Stearns is very calculated, he's not reactionary, he doesn't panic. I've never seen him panic. I'm not so sure that, you know, right away tomorrow they're going to, you know, announce that they're, you know, sending Warren down because he's unavailable. They're probably just going to shuttle him in and get another reliever up here. And Sproat and McClain is going to be called up. I mean, let's also remember, you've got the whole little thing with Paul Blackburn here. Paul Blackburn is a veteran. He's got a contract. You're going to have to make a decision on him. You know, at some point, you know, what are you going to do with Paul Blackburn? You're probably going to give him a shot. More than likely, and I know you don't want to hear this, Paul Blackburn is the one that's going to be next man up here. And away you go. I mean, I know that that's not, you know, sexy, and I know that that makes you scared because he's been bad, but that's the kind of arm that I could see getting a shot before any of the kids. Now, at September 1st, with the expanded rosters and the two extra spots, you know, maybe that is something a little bit different. We'll see how that goes. But history indicates that it's very hard to bring these kids up, dump them in the pennant race, you know, maybe out of the bullpen. We've talked about how the Yankees did it with Jabba Chamberlain. It's almost unfair because you're putting so much pressure on them. And with the innings limits, I mean, you're essentially bringing in more five-inning pitchers, which is fine because that goes to another key point about can the Mets win this way? And it's not ideal. Look, ideally, you want your starters to at least go six, and you'd love for them to have at least a couple of these guys that could go into the seventh inning occasionally. That's just not going to happen this year. Maybe David Peterson is that guy, and right now, if you started a postseason series tomorrow, I think he's your opener. He's your game one starter. You know, he's your guy that, you know, if you wanted to have two times around in the series, you want to get a quality start to hand it to the Super Bullpen, he's the guy. Ironically, I mean, who would have thunk that's where he'd be at? So, you know, but there is history. I talked about the 06 Mets, and you go back and look at that club. And by the end of the year, when Pedro was out and El Duque was out, I mean, they were basically going with, you had John Main and Oliver Perez, who were essentially five or six inning pitchers, you know, throwing a little Steve Traxel there. I mean, they were not able to really go deeper than that. You weren't going to get them to go much past two times around the order. Right now, you're only asking for guys to go one and a half times around the order, and they're struggling. A guy like Montas is struggling much past one time around. Now, Stearns said there's no plans to put Clay Holmes in the bullpen. Still makes you wonder if that, as a bulk reliever, is an option. Maybe that goes into play with one of the young pitchers getting called up. There's a lot of directions they can go. Ultimately, right now, we're changing the conversation completely. Okay, we're going back to the past. We're looking at history and saying, hey, look what the Mets did in 2006. Look what the Mets did, you know, with bringing up Pelfrey. Look what the Mets did to get through and do counting. You know, before it was all math and it was analytics at a high, high level, the Mets were just counting outs back in 2006. And they had enough relievers in the playoffs nightly. And right now, the key is get to the postseason. Get what is good at positioning as possible. Hopefully you win a division, which guarantees you a top three seed, but does not guarantee you anything more than 3 days in October. And let's face it, that's a dangerous series, whether you're playing that at Citi Field or you're playing that on the road. I mean, right now the Mets are only guaranteed with everything they've done to get the same 3 days in October that they got a year ago. And if they can get leads late into the sixth or seventh inning, especially with the way I saw Helsley throw on Friday night, I was there behind the plate, you know, you get a good look at the stuff, they're going to be tough to beat. Now, on the flip side, you could go back in history, and this is not as likely because the Mets went out and they got a Cedric Mullins. You see this kid, Carson Benj, down in Double A, tearing it up. it was just 10 years ago. The Mets were struggling on offense. They had really good starting pitching that year. Not so great bullpen, but a great closer. They needed offense. They needed offense badly. When you had Soup Campbell and John Mayberry and guys like that littered throughout the lineup, they had gotten no hit a couple of times that year. They got no hit by a journeyman, ironically, by the Giants pitcher. And they called up Michael Conforto in July. Now, it's a different regime, different front office, all sorts of different differences there. Would the Mets, because you hear, you know, maybe this kid is the real deal offensively, lefty bat, could you put him in center field? I mean, I know the fans don't appreciate, like I do, Tyrone Taylor's defense, but, you know, maybe you walk away from Taylor, you make Mullins more of your backup in case, the veteran backup. Again, I don't see that happening until possibly a September call-up. That'd be interesting. But the real question is, come those two spots in the September call-up, I mean, logically, you'd bring the base runner up, Acuna, that could steal bases and come off the bench. But then the other thing is, do you give a bench a chance to play a little bit in September? And one of the young pitchers. It's fair. And there is history that the Mets have done it. And it worked out for Conforto. Guy hit made big hits in a World Series. I mean, he was a big part of that run on the offensive side. And, you know, as far as 06, the way the Mets are trying to win ball games, this has been done before. Personally, I think it'll be a bigger part of baseball going forward until starting pitchers stay healthier and are developed to go deeper into games. And like I said, and I said this a couple of times throughout the shows the last, week, that takes a generation. That takes a decade to get that back, that worm to turn. They're going to, some team is going to have to be the one to pioneer it and say, hey, we're going back to the future here. And it's fair. You know, you see the Giants throw out one of their top prospects today, give them five good innings. Why not Sproat? Why not McClain? Why should I suffer through another Blackburn start? Why should I suffer through another Montas start? Well, because they're veterans. They've done it before. I think Montas is certainly a risk because even at his best, he's a guy that's been hit by left-handers. You saw the lefties crush him today. I mean, he didn't do better against the righties, but it was basically, if he doesn't master the right-handed part of the lineup and he gets a couple of runners on and lefty batters come up, it's a problem for him. And you've seen a lot of Blackburn, and you don't like what you see, but I really think Stearns is going to go that route before he brings in the kids. I just don't feel like he wants to throw the kids into a savior role. Because if Sprout goes up and gets his block thrown off, I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to stunt his development and he's done, but you know, now you've put him on the 40-man. Now you've started his free agency clock, albeit briefly. There's a lot of other long-term implications that could cost the Mets a ton of money in 6 years. So you have to balance it all out, and you have to really ask yourself, other than pacifying the fans and the dynamicism of a kid getting a start, which may provide the team a jolt, because at times we've talked about it, this team could be a little on cruise control. I'm not saying they're not trying, but there's a cruise control sense where they're almost trying to get through this to get to the postseason. And that's dangerous because you could wake up and, you know, they're in a spot where the low point and the high point, it puts them in the playoffs. But if Cincinnati gets hot, I mean, even Miami playing, 650 baseball for almost 2 months, you just never know. A lot of things happen in baseball, especially when teams get on a roll. And we've seen the Mets play, a stretch where they lost 20 out of 30. I mean, you do another stretch where you're losing 10 out of 15, you lose a lot of ground in the standings. All of a sudden, you're back in that muck that with the 7-game winning streak, you kind of pushed yourself out of that. So, big series coming up against Cleveland. Mets would like to get the homestand ended on a high note. That team going through some turmoil with their bullpen guys out because of the gambling scandal. Then they go to a brief road trip in Milwaukee, a test series. And, that's not going to be easy either. So, I guess the main point is you have some options down the minor leagues. Long term, you should be really excited about the position the Mets are in. We'll see what Ernie Dove, who's coming up, has to say about the prospect capital they gave up. But before you start to make knee-jerk demands and reactions, and even look at history and say the Mets did it here and there, remember who your GM is. Remember how methodical he is. Remember how he does not necessarily deviate from a plan right away. He doesn't listen to the fans. He doesn't listen to the media. He doesn't care if the booth is even demanding, the Gary, Keith, and Ron trio is demanding Sproat or McLean or whatever. He's going to do it his way, and he's going to be very methodical, and it's going to drive you bananas. But that's why he's paid the big bucks, and so far it's worked out. So we'll see. All right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, Ernie Dove, Mets prospect guru, independent media. He has his own Mets prospect report. You can follow him on X at Ernest Dove. And by the way, if you're not, you should. This guy, he interviews, recently interviewed Jonah Tong. He interviews players, talks to scouts, talks to people in the organization. If there is a guy that knows the Mets organization from soup to nuts and knows it for a long time now and has been exposed to players over the years that now are entrenched major leaguers, it's Ernest Dove. And he'll be up and he'll be talking about the Mets organization. He'll be talking about Sproat, McLean, Carson Benj, the deadline deals, the prospects they gave up, all that and more right after this.
RBI hit in the second. They made it 3-0 at the time. Ponies, as Benj hits the first pitch high in the air right field. De La Cruz back at the wall. Goodbye. Wow. Carson Benj ambushing Sinclair. A three-hit day. And the Ponies ahead 6-1. His fourth home run over the last three games. He's homered in each one of them. This one a towering fly that puts Binghamton ahead 6-1.
We're back, and yes, the trade deadline is over, but the Mets gave up a bit. And the debate over there is how much and was it worth it? And also, with the Mets going for it in the middle of a pennant race, we still have to look to the future. And maybe, who knows, there could still be help down on the farm. And joining us, as he always does, our good friend, the Dove Report, the New York Mets Dove Report, our prospect guru, Ernest Dove. You can check him out on Twitter, at Ernest Dove, and the fans love him. Ernie, listen, on Friday I got multiple emails from people saying, you know, this is a hard day. Mets gave up all these prospects. You got to call Ernie Dove and ask him if it's okay. So it's like you're like the gatekeeper now. If you say on this show it's okay and that what happened at the trade deadline is okay, you're going to have a bunch of people feeling a lot better about the Mets trade deadline, which is crazy to think because the Mets are in first place and playing for a pennant. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I mean, it's for better or worse, it was super, super exciting and heartwarming to get all those well wishes the entire trade deadline, including some of my insane super sources who even also messaged me and texted me to see if I was okay.
So that was pretty funny.
It's pretty amazing when certain people and even people in the Mets organization want to know how I felt. I think they were being sarcastic and that's fine. But yeah, I mean, overall, I'm okay. And I'm willing to discuss, you know, some of the outcomes, possible immediate replacements for the guys that were taken away from me. I mean, I got the goods if you want to hear it.
So Bob Nightingale, who's not exactly a pro-Mets reporter, threw out some information earlier, basically saying, hey, we all know San Diego gave up a ton with their backloaded contracts. Eventually a rebuild is going to come. If they win a championship, it goes Miami Marlins good, right? You get your day in the sun, and then it gets real ugly, and then you just, as a GM, you go to work and what have you. There was a lot of applause from, not from baseball writers, but from Stearns' colleagues that he got what he needed. Maybe he didn't get the starting pitcher, but he didn't really give up a prospect. And when I was doing my post-deadline show, I said, look, a good trade always has pain. Pain for the team giving up maybe emotional or sentimental player like a Helsley in St. Louis. And then the pain on the other side of something you gave up. I mean, maybe the Baez for Pete Crow Armstrong deal is somewhat of an example of that. Maybe there's more pain now than there was then. So I don't think the pain that the Mets gave up is a ton. And I think they gave up some scratch off lottery tickets. Maybe there's a win for life in there with Baez, maybe. But I don't think there's anybody there that is not replaceable in some way. And if the Mets win it all, nobody's going to care. And even if they don't, they have a fun rest of the season. I think it's worth it. Do you agree?
I mean, at the end of the day, the entire trade deadline as is, it's a positive for the Mets. Obviously, even people in the Mets organization, fans, anyone, they'll say the same thing. You have to give to get. So this seems to be the strategy of Stearns, who everyone seems to be mad at, depending on the section of Mets Twitter out there. Everyone thinks they suck no matter what happens. They can win a World Series and somebody will say they were lucky, even within the fan base, which is very weird. But this is the route that he wants it to go. So what is it that you want? He's not going to get anyone. He's not going to get the top guys. He gets three of the top relievers that were available at the entire deadline, and it's still not enough. Well, they didn't get the pitchers, who no one acquired. So, I mean, listen, if they would have been outbid from guys like Alcantara or, you know, Cabrera or the entire Marlins roster who they wanted to keep, I mean, we can try to sit here and debate the misses and the this and that, but now you're debating guys who weren't even dealt anyway. So back to the reality of it, they went with the rentals. It's always good to get guys with team control, but maybe under the circumstances, those were the most talented guys in the Mets' mind. That's why they got who they got. There were a few guys out there with some kind of contracts that go into next year. But then again, a team like the Padres, who I've said online, congrats to them for always winning the deadline and winning the offseason. I'm not sure how many rings they've won so far doing that, but congrats. I know, like, for example, they gave away their version of Elian Pena, who the Mets got in the recent IFA class. They gave up their version of him, one of those $4 to $6 million IFA kids. Who knows how he'll turn out in 5 years, but maybe the Mets didn't want to go that route. They kept Elian Pena, obviously. They kept all of the top five-ish. The one guy, obviously, Jesus Baez, who everyone knows I love.
Yep, you like him a lot.
I mean, I love him for personal reasons. I've met the family. Mom's amazing. But in addition to that, is he going to be a future Pete Crow Armstrong? I don't know. Can he be another version of Kalenic, who kind of like he hits a certain peak? I mean, he's an infielder who can successfully play three different positions. I love him at all of them. I think he has the arm strength for third. He's not going to strike out a lot. He walks enough. He's going to be a bat-to-ball guy. Does he end up turning into a Luis Guillorme? I don't know. I would see him being a better offensive tool than a Guillorme up the levels. But overall, you have to like the deadline. And again now, for better or worse, into the winter, they're going to start all over again, and Stearns is going to be able to do whatever he wants with all the open spots to come. So I was told specifically by the organization during the end of the trade deadline, Stearns is going for it. That's the quote I put out. That's directly from the Mets organization. It's what he did. I agree. Everyone's going to say I agree because of my pro bias, but how do you deny what they did? Center field, they got who they got. As far as I know, Robert is still on the White Sox. So again, like with Alcantara, how are you going to get mad for a team who didn't get a guy that nobody got?
But, and I think with Miami, knowing that the Mets are in the division, they're playing better. He's under a reasonable club control contract, Alcantara. You would have had to give up a pretty expensive package. Look at and what Preller did is where the prices were. If you wanted to get a expiring contract impact pitcher or bat, it was going to cost you pretty much what the Mets cost. Now, people are going to bring up the Yankees, what the Yankees did. All due respect, outside of Bednar, who the Yankees acquired is not as good as what the Mets got. There's no – Duvall and Bird are not as good as Tyler Rogers and Ryan Helsley. I'm sorry. I don't care what Baseball Savant says. Bednar, maybe you could argue and debate that, but clearly Pittsburgh likes a certain type of player that may not be on a pipeline or a Baseball America list. Let's remember, and you know this better, having this inside access, the GMs are not, I mean, they are looking at the list, but there's a lot more to players than where they're ranked. We don't have all the access, and I think that's what fans have to understand. We don't have access to all what these players are about, their tools, their skill set. There's a lot more to it, and I think that's important because fans seem to think now, because of video of minor league baseball, because of Pipeline, because of Baseball America, because on X there's all this information, that we are as qualified to assess this as the GMs or the assistant GMs or anybody who's in player development in that big boardroom.
Yeah, again, that's one thing I've said a few times over the years. Like a few years ago, I learned that like the Mets organization, which I'm sure all of them do, they literally rank their players. they rank their bats and they rank their arms from 1 to like 200. So for the entire farm system, it was kind of interesting when it was kind of said to me by one of the a prior staff in the Mets organization. It's kind of funny. Like, all right, you guys are just like us pretty much. You're sitting here ranking your guys. And again, yeah, there's a lot of factors that go into play, including behaviors, attitude. I mean, there's certain things they're not going to publicly say, especially when you're trying to trade guys. And you see the things I've learned over the years that some of these guys going up the levels, some of the 6-7 figure bonus players, they enjoy the limelight from day one before the hitting comes or the pitching comes. And they enjoy the stands, if you know what I mean. I mean, it's certain things. And I know Syracuse, by the way, the affiliate, is right near a college town area. So there's a lot of good times to be had, and you got to be on your own motivations. And the Mets organizations, like all teams, they know this. I don't know if it's not like NFL where they have investigators and all this other stuff, but they know what they got somewhat. They're all obviously a lot of them are going to be right and wrong depending on how these guys turn out. Again, they gave up who they gave up. I think Baez could be a major leaguer. I think Nate Dome can be really good. But even when I was told in spring they were being conservative with him, I think even from college they were trying to conserve innings, see how the health goes. So that's why a guy like that was moving along slowly. And him and a Frank Ellisalt were being piggybacked the entire year before the trade. So it's hard to even say, are they starters? Are they going to like build their innings now going into next year since they were piggybacked all year, the new organizations? I mean, there's a lot to say, but overall, everything was going good. And again, you're never going to know about certain prospects because there's only so much information that gets out there.
The lottery ticket arms, the Arencina, Ramon Gomez, any kind of feelings? I know that, again, you don't have a crystal ball, but when anybody in fans see 100 miles an hour, 102, whatever, which these guns are hot. I'm sorry. It's like so hard a human being can throw, but that's just my opinion. I don't have any fact behind it. Any kind of like concern that those guys might come back to bite the Mets? See, those are the ones I think that are the ultimate lottery tickets. And personally, they're so far away that I think you could replace them rather easily on the free agent market, to be quite frank at that point.
I mean, yeah, that's what you can say, honestly. Again, I love Dome. I've seen and heard a lot of good things with Frank Ellisalt, but the Mets over the last two draft classes, they were full of arms. So we're going from 2023, 2024. You got Wenninger. You got Zach Thornton. This past year, you got Will Watson. You got R.J. Gordon, Brendan Gurton. Like, there's a bunch of arms that might be similar to Dome and Ellisalt. And as far as guys like Arencina and Gomez, I mean, obviously Gomez threw 104.5, which it's always great. You know, Wild Thing can throw it. And that's how it's, you know, zoomed at the gun. I loved the idea of him. I didn't know ever if he was going to have enough command to be an eighth inning guy, which would be his ceiling with enough pitch command. But the command hasn't been there as a pro. And he also missed a couple of years here and there due to injuries. That's why I believe he's already, quote unquote, about 24 years old in A-ball.
Yeah.
Nothing disrespect to him. There were some delays and injuries. And as far as Arencina, now you're talking about a guy who's in that age 19, 20-ish range who can throw up to like 100, 101 when he goes one inning at a time. But they started stretching him out in the second month of the season, maybe May, June. So I think his velocity dipped and the command started to improve. So right when I started getting even more excited about Wellington Arencina dropping, quote-unquote, his fastball down to like 97, which is fantastic. But if he can go 3 to 5 innings – he may have an interesting future in about 2-3 years. Again, though, can he maintain command up at the AA level where nobody swings anymore at some of the junk? That's going to be his level, like all of them, to be tested. So, again, arms like that, even with guys like Jesus Baez, who I love to death, you know who's hot right now and plays all three positions that he does? Boston Barrow. And even a guy like Arencina, the Mets have older-ish flamethrowers. They have Dylan Ross in AAA. They have Ryan Lambert, who just closed out a no-hitter last night in AA. Those are guys that can go 98 to 101, and they could be closers. They can be 7th to 9th inning guys based on their projections and ceilings. So those are some of the replacements. And as far as velocity, Mets have guys with velocity. I post it all the time, so technically, there's replacements. On the other hand, we'll all play the hindsight game in 2-3 years. when people like myself, possibly hypocrite, I may start posting how they're doing later.
That's true. Ernie Dove with us. He knows the system. He knows the prospects. You check out his YouTube page. Check him out on X. Before I make one other point about, I think you've done this before, about minor league space and roster and Rule 5, which I think the fans totally forget about. Jose Buto, a guy that for years you were on here talking about with me. You always liked him. He's had, he's been with the Mets organization a while. You know, there was always doubt about how good he would be. Had a nice run last year as a reliever. Let's be honest. After that nice hot 2 or 3 month stretch last year, he hasn't been all that good. His command has never been great. Serviceable, good arm. Maybe San Francisco puts him in the rotation come spring. I thought it was funny how he, or odd maybe, that he wasn't even considered this year to compete for a spot. So it tells you a lot what the Mets thought about him. Any final thoughts on Buto? I get why they got rid of him. You know, doesn't really have options, and maybe the future didn't really look bright here, and the value was what it was. I thought the Tyler Rogers deal was expensive, but he's a good arm, and he's a guy that I think the Mets are confident maybe could resign, even though he's in his mid-30s, and a guy who could probably stay healthy because of the kind of funky delivery. He's an anomaly in 2025 baseball. Any final thoughts on Buto, particularly, or even maybe Blade Tidwell? I'll throw in there because Tidwell, at one point was very highly regarded. He's a little bloom off the rose there too.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things where that's the one where I feel like they gave up too much, in my opinion, prospect hugger or not. I could try to explain myself in my own debate about replacements for them. But again, now you're bringing up the real point of what's going on here. Now, I'm never going to compare the Mets to the Rays, who we joke about all the time, how amazing they are. But here's where we're at, and you just said it. With a guy like Buto, he's out of options. A guy like the fireballer Ramon Gomez, Rule 5 eligible at the end of the season. Wellington Aracena is only 20 years old, but guess what? Next year, Rule 5 eligible. And starting next year, a whole bunch of guys are going to be Rule 5 eligible, including this one. After this season...
That's a key point. Look up and down at roster resource Fangraphs. Tons of guys in the next 12 to 18 months are going to have to be put on a 40-man roster, right? And there's only so many spots.
What else can you do? And you see what's happening right now. The Mets are, whether people want to say it and whether negative Mets Twitter wants to admit it or not, the Mets are all in again this year. So because they're all in, this isn't about we're going to keep all the prospects, keep them all. Okay, what are we doing? Even Ernest the prospect hugger since 2013, 12 years later, I understand these guys aren't going to just be together. I'm also trying to figure out how they're going to keep the baby Mets together at this point. But maybe by offseason, someone's getting offloaded because they still can't even keep them. But they probably like what they have for 2025 with the baby Mets plus this rental bullpen. And then like half or most of those guys might be gone in the winter. This is the version of all in that they're going with. But yeah, every year at this point, you can't hold on to these guys. Now you have to be more controllable. Even today, going into the weekend, there's already another guy in Rico Suave getting DFA'd because now they're down to the one spot remaining.
And they went from having multiple optional spots going into spring. I mean, unless you want to consider Reed Garrett, that guy, he's got options. He's not going anywhere. No. They don't have much roster flexibility anymore. The Blackburn situation is going to be interesting. I don't know how they fit him in, and he's admittedly not comfortable coming out of the pen. It's fascinating, to be honest with you.
Which technically, whether people want to hear it or not, there's going to be a use for Paul Blackburn, or even if McGill ever comes back this year, because the Mets, we've seen it, we know it, we've heard it. I don't know how much longer we're waiting on these two or three guys to actually throw 100 pitches a week, but between Senga, Manaea, and Montas, Can any of them do it between now and the end of the season? I hope so, but the Mets really still need a sixth starter. Blackburn, say what you want, but if he can go 5 innings and give up 3 runs, even 4 runs, at this point, I think we'll take it. Because what else do we have here? We can't have everybody keep hopefully pitching through 5 anyway, and then the bullpen is going to be shot again with all these new guys. And here we are again now. We're already trying to establish what's going on. Reed Garrett now is the multi-inning guy because there's no more Kranich for the year. He's stepping into the role, which is fantastic, but you're still going to have certain guys pitching And they were going to have, you know, Helsley pitch in the eighth until the game got completely blown open. But then you still have Rayleigh pitching, who, by the way, was our eighth inning guy last
year.
So you're still going to be burning pen arms because the starters cannot pitch. Again, the offense needs to wake up anyway. If some guy can go six innings, four runs, I'll pat him on the back right now for the rest of the season on the Mets.
You mentioned the baby Mets, whether that's the name you give them, because fans now get mad by using that. Was they're not really that baby. Putting Alvarez aside, who clearly went down, got his head right, reset, got maybe a little more serious. Personally, I think it might have been a bit of a wake-up call. Hey, there's no scholarships here. You could lose this overnight. Putting him aside because he's playing a premium position, a unique bat at a premium position, so I don't see him as being in the same spot. You have Mauricio. You have Beatty. Pretty much vying for those two spots. You have Acuna who got sent down. Where do you, you know, then you got Vientos, another quagmire. Like, you're right. Every day I flip-flop, I go, well, Mauricio has got the most talent, like body, you know, but can he consistently hit big league pitching? You saw on Friday night, I was at the game behind home plate. You know, that's a tough pitcher he faced there in the 10th inning. But he set him up pretty good, and it was in a little over his head, a lot of hitters might be, but he's particularly looked in over his head. Beatty, to me, just every time you want to start believing he can become a solid Alec Bohm type, you know, component third baseman at the very least, he starts to go into a funk. And then Vientos, it's just you got the chip on your shoulder week here. The defense is awful. It's regressed. DH and being JD Martinez is somewhat limiting in today's game with no bench. I who's going to survive? Who would you like to see survive? You know, personally, if you know, I know that's just your opinion. I just don't know right now. Every day I flip flop. I mean, Mauricio to me seems the one that's the hardest to give up. But Vientos, for some reason, and I think the fans have this love affair because of what happened last year. There's something about him because he has that, you know, it factor from a personality standpoint. So, what do you? And then Beatty, to me, is the least it factor of all of them, but that's a whole other story. That's just my opinion. So what are your thoughts?
I mean, even for a couple of years now, if depending on what you believe, what you want to read, what you want to hear, Brett Beatty might be some future all-star in some Oakland, Rays, even a Milwaukee situation in a different market to just leave him be, let him do his thing and rock. That could still be a future. But yeah, the scary one is going to be Ronnie Mauricio. And at this point, when I'm still joking about the Ronnie Mauricio walk alert, and even people are like, dude, he's actually walking at a decent, a really good clip right now.
And he's working with Soto, who's not a bad guy to work with.
And that's the thing, too. Like, again, there's no way I'm comparing it all whatsoever. But when you have a Javi Baez hitting 230, comes to the Mets hitting 300 plus in that month or two with some kind of coaching and Lindor and support and balance, I'm not saying Mauricio is going to be some 350, 360 on base guy, OBP guy, but what if? I mean, what if a guy at his still young maturity who lost the entire year of some of his early prime with the leg injury, what if he could balance out a little bit more from the right-hand side as a switch hitter? If he were to do that, defense or not, and Brett Beatty's become a huge metrics analytic darling. He looks like he could almost win a gold glove at this point out of nowhere at third base.
Is amazing to me where he was just a couple of years ago. Amazing.
He's done incredible, but I think obviously of the three, Mauricio would be the most damaging loss. He almost feels like he's a PCA in waiting if you trade him and you get somebody gives him 600 at-bats, supplants him out of position no matter what. What if he hits 30 home runs and 20-plus stolen bases, 20-plus doubles? It's going to drive a lot of people insane. Now, as far as Mark Vientos, everyone's got an idea, and even as a prospect hugger, I get it. Keep them all. Put them all as the DH. But number one, like you said now, more teams use the versatility of DH, including the Mets. The Mets seem to be hell-bent on either doing a platoon or resting one of their guys, like a Nimmo, who probably might need some rest for the rest of his career, at least once a week here and there.
Maybe twice. He's got some serious injuries. Yep.
I mean, like, what are we going to do here? A guy like Soto, who you may want a once in a while for the next few seasons, like, they're going to need the DH position. You can't just make Vientos JD Martinez for the next 10 years. I don't think it's logical or realistic. So, yeah, to really to wrap it up, I think Ronny Mauricio is the one of the three that you keep, and you take your chances that the other two become legit, wonderful, solid regulars for the next 5 or 10 years.
10 years ago, the Mets needed offense. Different team, different needs. And there was a kid in AA raking that was a recent draft pick. They called up, and then he wound up hitting really well down the stretch, becoming a core offensive player and actually playing well and hitting a home run in the World Series. His name was Michael Conforto. There is a kid who can play center field who is the best hitter, according to you, in the system. Some people think it's Jet Williams, but Carson Bench, Carson Bench is starting to get the love from everybody, not just the prospect guys, the deep in the weeds guys like you. I know he's not getting called up because you got Cedric Mullins, but it is kind of enticing to look and say, the Mets called up a Greg Jeffries during the 88 pennant race. They called up Conforto in 2015. It wouldn't be the first time a team calls a player up and says, hey, you know, what could you do for us? And put him in a spot where he can basically hide. Any thoughts on that? I know it's unlikely, but it's not a crazy idea. And is it an idea that, you know, an Ernie Dove can support, knowing what you know about him?
I mean, talking around, the one thing everyone wants to ask me now, obviously, is can he play center field? Because we know about Nimmo and Soto, obviously. So sure. Everyone just wants to know, Dove, can he play center so he could just be our center fielder for the next 10 years? Probably. Speaking around even some teammates, talking to pitchers, who, by the way, pitchers need defense behind them. So teammates are like, when I ask, how can he play, you know, between center, left, and right, which one? And he's like, all. Who cares?
Right.
They basically told me, quote unquote, he can do whatever he wants out there.
But so, is he good defensively? Is he a rangy guy in center? Does he have the arm, I guess, because even Nimmo didn't have an arm. My big thing in center is range, which you see with Taylor, and Taylor has a decent arm. Range is critically important. And Stearns doesn't want to have – Stearns is not putting Howard Johnson in center field. Stearns not putting Keith Miller in center field. Stearns isn't going to treat center field like it's you know, a position to hide an offensive player. He's not going to put a Michael Conforto, who actually played an okay center field. He wants a glove guy there. Let's face it. That's all he's ever done since he's been here. Can Benj be enough of a glove to play that position? Or is he Michael Conforto?
I mean, based on the people I'm talking to, yes, he can handle center field. And obviously the Mets are making a decision. They traded away Drew Gilbert. So, and there's the next man up. Now, should they call him up right now? No. And among other things, well, let's call him up to do what? We did this with Acuna. We did it with even way back in the days with a guy like Nimmo. And you call guys up and they play once a week and it's
what doesn't make
get
sense
out of them. So
yeah.
Now again, come September, I can name a couple of guys, including Benj, if you want to jump him in September. But then again, now, what are we doing, man? What are we doing, Silva? Now we're going to do the 40-man thing again, because if you give a 40-man spot to Benj, you can option him, but you can't obviously DFA him to take him off the 40-man. So do you want to burn a 40-man right now for a guy who's in AA? The Mets obviously did it 10 years ago, but that was a college bat. I don't remember the ages, if technically Conforto was a little bit older, but he was said to be a pretty much close to MLB-ready guy anyway from the draft based on how they felt he was playing by the time he finished college. Even with a pitcher like Sproat would probably be in the majors already with enough pitch command, because, again, he was a senior sign technically at the end of the day because he went back to school. So I just don't see that happening with a guy like Benj. Well, let's get the fire while it's hot. Okay, like you just said with Mullins, he can't play anyway, so what are we doing? Make him the DH? Not while Marte's here, because, by the way, he's still a veteran.
He's actually hitting. He's hitting pretty well against left-handed pitching, yeah.
So what are we going to do? Come September, I got ideas. Now, it's wonderful to talk about his box scores, and again, I'm backing it up. Staff and teammates feel he's legit as well, so he's doing all the right things. He'll probably be on the team next year.
We talked about Blackburn, and we talked about, we're bouncing back to the pitching here a little bit, but you know, there's this like tease that Stearns keeps putting out there about possibly a Sproat or McClain. And I don't think forget Tong, he's not coming up. And I just don't see, unless there's an injury or they're going to shut somebody down like Holmes for like you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks, just to get their innings under control, where that fits. And I wonder what they would feel about an up and down in the bullpen. Although you can manage this bullpen where if a guy's available on a certain day to piggyback, you could probably manage the game that way if you really wanted to. Do you think we'll see a Sproat debut, a McClain debut before the season's out? Or am I missing somebody that maybe I'm not thinking about? Because those are the only two that make, you know, Weniger, no, right? Santucci, no, guys like that. Tong, no.
Yeah, because here we are again with the 40-man issue, like with the bats, but this could be a little bit different. Because again, Benj is different. Hitting is different.
That's a very key point. You got to make a 40-man spot. Key point.
So no matter who you call up among all the guys who I feel could make the leap, I feel there's multiple players, including a lot of the veterans. Joey Meneses is still there.
Sure.
There's guys down there. As far as McClain and Sproat, this is the situation where you could give one of those guys a 40-man, because let's face it, I don't know what's going to happen for next year in 2026, but these guys at this point are going to be entrenched. They're either going to be in the rotation, or they're going to be a Tidwell situation or a Buto, where they find their time in the majors year-round, but maybe don't for the whole year. Either way, it's going to be worth giving one of them a 40-man spot. You've got to take that risk at some point. I mean, the Mets are running out of the option players, of course. They're down to the one spot that could already be filled by a Blackburn. But maybe they give him a call, and then maybe if he has a rough outing, do you go ahead and give him the gamble, give him the shot? If he kind of, you know, poops the bed here, do you go ahead and DFA Blackburn at that time? Then you go McClain or Sproat. Maybe, in my opinion, that could be the option. You got to go with the veteran first. Or even into September now, do you want to give that spot in September? That's when I think it comes into play. Do you call up an Acuna for the bat, and then you call up McClain or Sproat as the pitcher for the 28 man?
Right, and then, you know, we kind of throw in a Dylan Ross. You mentioned him, you know, bullpen arm. Do they go K-Rod circa 2002 and bring him up, and does he, you know, as the seventh guy in the pen? I don't know if he could. Obviously, the pen is so deep now, barring an injury. And you know, they talk about these arms. I mean, Weniger, Santucci. By next year around this time, Tong, Mets conceivably, and it never really works out this way, obviously, with injuries and trades, could have five starting pitchers to fill their rotation, with the only guy really an option long-term after next year for a couple of years is Manaea. You know, we don't know what Holmes is going to be about. Montas is a short-term deal. Senga only has a couple of years left. Mets are very positioned to have a homegrown rotation, and, I mean, they'll probably sit back and see what star pitcher that could stay relatively healthy is going to be available, because I don't think Stearns likes 7-year deals like Corbin Burns type deals for pitchers. So do the Mets throw that in the mix? Do we take a Dylan Ross or an arm? You mentioned Lambert. Do any of the bullpen arms become an option for those last two spots in September?
That's what I would think. The one would be Dylan Ross. He had another one of those blow up outings last week as far as too many walks. But then he had a string of five appearances in July without issuing a walk. So that's all I'm going to talk about with Dylan Ross, because he throws 100. He's got a plus splitter. Is there going to be enough command, even for one inning, for him to go lights out, throw 99, get that splitter going, and get you out of an inning as a seventh, eighth, ninth inning guy? He could be a possible September call-up. When I asked about him recently, they were like, well, no room, which I understand that. But are they saying no room in general? Or are they saying Stearns has that plan, like I just mentioned, that can go to Blackburn, then McClain, then Sproat? You might want to go with a starter before the pen arm guy, just because you want to have the highest, highest value perhaps at the end. That could still be an option. And I believe the thing with Dylan Ross is, by the way, I could be mistaken, but I think he's another one of those guys who's Rule 5 eligible this December. So either way,
he's going to be on the roster.
You're going to be on the 40-man in December anyway, or November, however they want to do it. So he would be, quote-unquote, the easiest to call up at this point at the end of the year, because you're going to have to protect him anyway, even beyond McClain and Sproat, who aren't 40-man eligible yet.
Yeah, and that plays into it. All right, so before we let you go, don't want to get too deep in the weeds with the system now and rankings, but post trades, only one top 10, you know, depending on how you look at Gilbert, which we glossed over Gilbert. I think anybody thinks Gilbert's going to be PCA, I think they got to realize Gilbert's a nice story. That's not who he is. Is there a name on either side of the ball in this organization that we haven't mentioned, taking the benches out and the obvious with the pitchers, that you're looking at that really can make the jump with some of the room in the top, you know, 10, top 15, top 20? Is there a name you're really looking at right now that we should, you know, not that he's going to impact this year, but we should start getting excited about and that you're going to start really talking about going into 26?
I mean, I can still get into guys that are ranked. A lot of the fellow minor league junkies will know who they are. Some of them are highly ranked. One of the guys who's now top 10 at this point, well, you still have a guy like A.J. Ewing, who could be, again, now one of those outfielders after younger than Benj who can play center field. Ewing's got probably more speed. So you have guys like that. You have Nick Morabito, who, by the way, is going the entire season kind of sniffing an 800 OPS, which for him is huge. Because everything talks about Nick Morabito, no home run power. We don't count him for anything. But he's still doing really well at the double-A level. As far as even some of the arms, we still have plenty. With Will Watson is going to be an arm to pay attention to. Now, the other guy, again, I just mentioned him earlier. Boston Barrow is one of the hottest hitters right now in the Mets minor league system, if not baseball in general. I think the last I quoted, he's about 14 for 32 over the last 8 games. I was told in the last few days, he kind of tweaked something, worked on something. He's doing those things that Gary talked about more certain hitters waiting on the ball more. I think it was for like Soto telling Mauricio, wait on the ball, use your bat speed. I think something like that clicked last week for Boston Barrow, who by the way now is just rocking ever since. He's trying to go oppo naturally. So there's also Boston Barrow. The younger kids like Trey Snyder from the recent draft, his stats aren't great right now, but coaches like his plate discipline. They like the well-rounded game. Those are some of the guys to kind of think about. Even some of the other arms, again, those draft picks from last year, RJ Gordon now is technically ranked in the top 30. There's going to be more and more kids to come up the system going into next year, but those are some of the arms now you're going to think about going into next year, because a lot of these college arms, they're already going to be at least in AA in 2026. We're going to be mentioning almost all of them for who to call up. And again, now I have to watch myself because I felt we were doing this anyway. We were all about the entire Syracuse Mets rotation. It's all major leaguers when it was Vassell, Hamill, Tidwell. And then guess what happens? All of a sudden, Sproat jumped over most of them or all of them because year to year, guys do what they do. Dom Hamill is still on the with the organization.
Right.
Still struggling.
Quietly turning himself into a reliever, doing a little bit better. Quietly. And it has to be a decision for a Rule 5 spot
Another Rule 5 situation. Does somebody want to treat Hamill like a Vassell, draft him in the Rule 5?
I could see it in this day and age of payrolls and bullpen arms costing a lot. Yeah, he gets stopped up. Now, whether he sticks around like Nunez got sent back a few years ago, that's a whole nother story. And then you have all the injuries and the Tommy John and stuff like that. So I think the biggest takeaway, and I think the fans who are so used to having a shallow prospect base, there's been a ton of turnover. We talked about this the last time in the player development side since Sandy Alderson stepped down in 2018 and then came back. Turnover. Mets don't have that. Stearns has his guys. Stearns' guys, short of a promotion to a GM spot, are going to be here during his tenure. You have consistency. So the Mets are now able to not only spend at the big league level, but I think there's not a fear of trading prospects in the 20 to 30 range or giving up a Baez who could haunt them, because they're like, hey, we're going to get another Baez. We're going to constantly have these type of options, because let's face it, prospect game is quantity as much as it's quality at this point. Look at Kumar Rocker. Everybody freaked out about Kumar Rocker. I know he's 25 years old. He's got an ERA close to six. You know, yeah, I'm not saying he's not talented. You know, you can't win championships waiting for guys like that, you know? So, and I know you have to fill out rosters with guys like that, but the Mets could do that anyway, you know? So I think that that's an important takeaway from the deadline, that I think you're seeing the new Stearns organization almost 2 years in now is starting to evolve. It's not there yet, but it's a lot closer than it's ever been. And that's very quick considering what he took over. He didn't take over a complete mess. He took over inconsistency and disjointed is the word I would use.
Well, yeah, people started jumping on some old post I had like 5 years ago when BVW slash Jeff GM traded, I think, 20 prospects within like a 12-month period between winter and trade deadline. And they basically acquired fourth outfielders and like
right.
Darren Ruff. And that was their – these are the kind of guys they were acquiring for 20 minor leaguers, which is insane to give up 20. And you don't even have a guy that you keep at that point after the 20 are gone. So they may never go that route again, hopefully. But again, now they're going to be really playing chess with that Rule 5, perhaps, among other things, to try to maneuver these two, three, you know, package kids at a time that you have to do something with anyway. I think the strategy is going to pay off. Like you said, I don't know what, if anyone, ever is going to get a 5 to 7 year deal as a pitcher for a Stearns-run Mets organization. We shall see. Now, again, maybe in winter, will they go ahead and acquire a Sandy Alcantara over the winter, Alcantara? Because now you still have the years of control. Maybe they just didn't want him right now for a whole package. Maybe they'll give up something in winter when they get a longer look at what he does through August and September.
Right. Absolutely. So what do you got coming up? You got the YouTube channel. You got X. Fans love hearing from you. You were the first name that came up. Emails to me, multiple people. Hey, could you get Ernie Dove on? And I was thinking about it anyway. Nobody is independent, unaffiliated that they go to more than you. And quite honestly, I'm not just saying this to blow smoke. With the way that the prospect game has turned into a cottage profit industry, you give a lot more honesty and content than maybe some of the guys that are paid to do it that are more maybe promoting who they have to promote. So give me the scoop about where the fans can follow you, support you, and what to expect. Is right now it's about go getting it done at the big league level, but with an eye to what the minor league system is doing, because that's going to play a part in the winter into 26.
Yeah, hopefully if everybody continues following me throughout the year and definitely over winter, because the season never ends for the minor league information, including Rule 5s and everything else that's going to happen. So follow me on the New York Mets Dove Report on YouTube. The plan going forward, again, I recently interviewed Jonah Tong, by the way. So if you missed that interview, please go on the YouTube channel. Check out the interview with Jonah Tong.
Interesting personality Tong has. Let's see if it continues going into the big league clubhouse potentially in a year or two.
No, he's a good kid. He's got an insane work ethic, strong family background and support. I've also interviewed Jack Weininger, who you mentioned briefly. Now, coming up in the next week or two, I have some things in the pipeline. I might be interviewing even more of some of the top overall prospects in the organization and maybe even some of the top recent draft picks, by the way. Wink, wink. I have some stuff in the pipeline. So if you check out my YouTube channel over the next couple of weeks, you may see even more player interviews. And I definitely want to interview one of the coaches within the Mets organization. So that's already been lined up as well. So just check those out. Support the minor league junkies out there. And yeah, that's the biggest things right now, is just to support that channel, support minor leaguers, and keep Let's Go Mets.
Ernie, it was a painful deadline, but it was a paper cut, maybe. Let's put it that way. So I'm glad we had a chance to catch up. Thank you so much. This is helpful. I know the fans will love it. And let's catch up soon, my friend. Be well, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Ernie Dove, you guys know him, you know, at Ernest Dove on Twitter, and good stuff. So, you know, it was the first name that came to my mind, bringing him on, kind of thinking about, you know, look, I read what you read. This guy really does subject matter expert research. Hope you enjoyed the perspective. It gave you not only a perspective about, you know, the players that went for the rentals, but also organization, roster building, how they look. It's far more nuanced than just this player is X and the value of the trade. So you guys got to learn a little bit. I got to learn a little bit. So let's take a quick break, wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. I thought Ernie Dove did a great job. Of course, we had that conversation pregame before the Mets Giants, so maybe we would have dived a little bit more into the pitchers, you know, based on the Montas performance. But you heard him. I mean, he was intrigued by bringing them up. I think that there's some 40-man considerations. I still get the feeling that we're a couple of weeks away from it. I think that they're going to go with Blackburn one more time. I don't think they're going to pull the plug on any of the current starters unless there's an injury. And the earliest I can see these kids get brought up is September, where maybe there's a managed amount of innings. And I still wonder if it would be more in a bulk situation where they would piggyback. I just don't see, especially because, you know, knowing that there is, you know, probably only 30 to 40, maybe 45 innings out of both of them, I don't know how the Mets look at the innings jump year over year. But I don't think they're going to just throw caution to the wind for these kids. I mean, what are the odds they're going to hand the ball to these kids in a big postseason spot, in a big postseason game? I mean, really, you have to think about that logically. Yeah, all right, would they give them a start against the Braves in August or, you know, even, you know, with the, against the Phillies? All right, maybe, you know, get them to go through the lineup twice, 1.5 times, whatever it may be. But, I mean, if you're going to bring them up, you're going to put them on the 40-man, you're going to start the clock on all this. They're just not in a position right now, mainly because of the innings they've thrown, where I could see them, other than a snapshot in time, a couple of starts, really having an impact. And I think Stearns is going to look at that. I think Stearns is going to say, look, if I'm going to get 5 innings, 2 or 3 runs out of these kids, Paul Blackburn could get that to me, and I could probably stretch him into a postseason situation. And also, he's a free agent. Let's be honest. They might abuse him a little bit more than they would the kids. I mean, that's just part of these players, you know, talking about them in terms of being more of an asset. So anyway, that's the situation. That's where we're at. Hope you enjoyed. I think Ernie Dove does great work. Support that YouTube channel. We want to see Ernie continue to go out and provide his content for many, many years to come. He does a great service to the Mets community. Love having him on. We've had him on twice this year, and both times he's illuminated us and provided some great information and helped us understand the situation and grow our learnings of Mets baseball. So anyway, okay, I'm not sure when you're getting this, but obviously there's the Twitter Spaces later tonight. You can check me out there, and I hope that you join me, and I hope that you take part in it if you're there live. It will be available. I've put it in to be also available as an MP3 recording. I'll probably post the link to the Substack for everybody, you know, paid regardless. So check that out. And, you know, continue to tune in to the Talking Mets podcast as this is the go get it done phase. And all that we talk about now will be, how do we get this Mets team into a division championship? How does this Mets team make the postseason? And then at that point, it's a tournament and it's anybody's ball game. You know that. So, all right. Want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fan Sided Podcasting Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.